after that section, then you began talking about Zechariah. You were kind of talking about his response that was with doubt. I really liked the reflection that you made, because a lot of times I feel like people will explain it and just say, look, you just have to presume that there is some sort of doubt. But you kind of developed that a little bit more, talking about maybe him struggling to accept John's vocation.
Yes.
Because, you know, he maybe had wanting to name him Zechariah to be like him, but that God had a different plan and implied in that by the name. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. So it's interesting. But first of all, what we know is Zechariah was a good and holy man. I mean, he's not going to become the father of John the Baptist because he's a bad guy. He's a good man. And an angel's been sent to him, you know. So the real question is, where is that defect? Why is it that he has a struggle? And it's shortly after the angel tells him that he's going to be conceived. And then the angel tells him what his name's supposed to be. It's supposed to be John. And it's after that that Zachary says, well, how shall I know this? And he starts hemming and hawing. And the angel Gabriel's, you know, has no time for that. He's just like, well, since you don't believe me, it's going to happen anyway. And you're going to be struck deaf and dumb. And he just, you know, lets him have it. And there's Zachary kind of, you know, chastened, but nevertheless, still faithful. He goes home. He does what he's supposed to do, and he sees his wife Elizabeth. Now, at the time that John is born, everybody expects him to be named Zachary. And you might think to yourself, oh, that's the tradition. In those days, they always had the first son was named after the father. That's not true. Look through all the genealogies in the scriptures, and you find it's rare that the son has the same name as the father. It's extremely
rare. Yeah, because in the genealogy, otherwise it would be just, you know, Hezekiah, you know, it would just be the same name over again, but they almost all have different names from their fathers.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, so you go through the different genealogies we find in scripture, and it's extremely rare that the oldest son is named after the father. Okay. So you can't just take for granted, oh, well, everyone knew that he was going to be named Zachary. Okay. And so then the next question comes up, well, how did they know? And Elizabeth knew, and all the neighbors knew before the child was even born. How did they know that? Zachary, remember, at the time John was conceived, Zachary was dumb. He was mute and couldn't speak. So they didn't hear it from him after the conception. They just assumed it, right? And then Elizabeth goes and says, no, his name is John. And they still resist. Now, that's remarkable, because in the scriptures, the mother did have a right to impose a name on the child. We find that in many cases that the mother is a co-partner and sometimes is the one who takes the initiative in naming the child. For example, with St. Joseph, Joseph's mother, Rachel, says, I want him to be named Joseph, you know. And so the mother did have a right to name her child. And yet, even in spite of that, her expressed desire that his name should not be Zachary but John, then they go to Zachary. And so it causes a little bit of a mystery. You say to yourself, why were they so certain? My reading into the text is that Zachary must have told them in advance, if I ever have a son, I want him to be like me. I want him to be named Zachary, etc. That they must have heard that from him before. And so they assume that. And then when Zachary finally admits, no, he writes down his name is John. Only after Zachary says his name is John is he suddenly freed from his punishment. As if to say the punishment was in part because he didn't want his son to have his own vocation, to have his own life, but rather he wanted his son to be built and to follow his own vocation, his own life, his own fatherly plan for him. And Zachary, I think, realized God has a plan for my son, and it's not my plan for my son. And he goes out in the desert as a young man, some fathers of the church said he was a child when he went out to the desert. So it must have been very painful for Zachary to have to give up and let go of his son there. But John had this unique vocation from God and was just, he felt driven, you know, to follow the vocation God gave him. And that's instruction for every father, just realizing, you know, God might have a different vocation for your child than you want him to have, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a great model for fathers and mothers to reflect on, because it makes sense that, you know, they had the established religion of Judaism. So kind of everything's already in place. You don't need to go out into the wilderness like the prophets of old. But he does, because there's this new, so to speak, religion coming. And I could see how everyone would think that's crazy. Why are you doing that? Why don't just, the temple's right there. Why do you go out into the desert?
Yeah.
That if they were waiting for the Messiah, they may not have been necessarily waiting for someone like the new Elijah, you know, St. John the Baptist. They may not have had that in mind as like, oh yeah, well, I want my son to one day be the precursor to the Messiah. You know, that may not have been their aspiration. So I think it could be good for people to reflect on that, and maybe seeing like, maybe I need to take some time in silence, like Zechariah, like self-imposed silence, to kind of pray and reflect so I can accept what my son or daughter is being called to.